Are you looking to fine-tune? Whether for your business, your job, your team, or yourself, in each episode, we will be discussing different ideas and opinions using real-world examples to help you see opportunities, innovate, and succeed. Hi, it's Corby Fine, and welcome to Fine Tune. So I've had the opportunity to work in a bunch of different industries. I've worked in telecommunications, I've worked in financial services, I've worked in ad agencies. And along the way, you often have an opportunity to meet some really good, talented, fun, smart people that you say, hey, I'd love to work with that person again. Well, one of those people is Maya Niebel. Maya's with me today. She is currently the Chief Marketing Officer of Banking at BMO Financial Group in Canada, so well recognized as someone who's just super innovative. She takes action. She is a leader in the marketing and customer experience, as well as digital spaces to beyond 20 years of experience. Not to age you, Maya, but you know, you've got some experience like I do. Before BMO, Maya has worked globally in the US and Canada, in Europe, in different industries like myself, and maybe that's why we get along so well. Microsoft, Expedia, Rogers, Telenor. And what's crazy is Maya comes at it with a background in math. Like, I had no idea about that, but a degree in math and an MBA from Switzerland, IMD. I mean, that is top-notch education, but it really comes down to how Maya executes on her job, leading teams, building businesses. And I'm so glad to have you today, Maya. Welcome to my podcast.
Good morning, Corby, and thank you for having me. And thank you for that lovely introduction. Appreciate it.
Well, it's generally deserved of the people that I bring on. And again, thanks for sharing some time. So, you know, I want to jump in. You know, you're currently working in the financial services industry. You've been in your role for the better part of 4 years. And, you know, as an executive in that space, that's a long time. And you've seen a lot of transition, especially with regards to the consumer behavior and how we, because we're both consumers too, interact with our banks, with our financial services institutions. Now, I, as someone born in Canada, have always had this notion that a bank is a bank is a bank. A financial services institution is pretty much ubiquitous across the board. But what's your take? What really is the current day differential? What sets one bank apart or one financial institution apart from the other?
Yeah, that's such a good question, Corby. And I think for Canadian banks, and if you think about the big bank players, the banks, BMO Financial Group included, have a very strong sense of the bigger role we play in the societies we operate in. When I think about BMO Financial Group, we think about our customers, consumers, as kind of our number one constituent. But obviously, there are many other players in the mix that we also think about as we choose what to do and how we differentiate ourselves. One of those are the communities that we operate in and the positive impact that we have on the communities that we operate in. And the second one, of course, are our employees and the environment that we create for them through the employer value proposition and try to differentiate ourselves in that space. I would say that a Canadian bank, BMO Financial Group, that's been around for over 200 years has so much to be proud of in both the role that we serve our consumers and the role that we serve and support our communities. But I think what you're really asking me is more about the consumer perspective and how would one bank differentiate themselves from the other. What we know from the consumers in the past, but much more so today and over the past 5 or 10 years, is that there are a couple of factors that play a really important role in their choice of the bank and then translate into what we do in marketing. It is a combination of what we now think about as a perceived convenience, and number two, the distinctiveness, the way you're really different. So that convenience, and the reason I call it perceived, is that it used to be, you know, do I have a branch near me? And as you and I know, that has changed significantly over the past decade. While consumers still go to the branch from time to time, the ability to do most of their banking from wherever they are and whenever they want to do it, from either their phone or their computer or by calling an IVR or a contact center, just making it really convenient for the consumers has become really the entry of the game and so critical. And I think for us at BMO, something that we have spent lots of time and effort in. And the examples of this are very agile working models, which allow us to create new and improved customer experiences in the digital space almost on an always-on basis. You know, back in the olden day, a bank may release something new in technology space like once a year, maybe two times a year. And now we're at the point where we continually have the releases of new and improved capabilities because we know how important that convenience is for the consumers. So that's one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is, what are the distinctive things that any one bank can offer to make them stand out in the consumer mindset? For us at BMO, we are a bank that provides a very, very broad spectrum of financial services. We play in all of the segments. We are a big retail bank and even a bigger commercial bank and a business bank. And so for us, one distinctive factor that goes across our enterprise and is certainly related to us in our consumers is the humanity of the bank, the way we show up to our customers. And so the challenge for us has been is how to turn that humanity from human-only channels to human and digital channels. And what we really want to do in retail space is help our customers make real financial progress. We find that many consumers are very scared, insecure. Will they be able to get a house? Will they be able to pay off their loans? Do they know how to save for the future? Often they feel like they may be making some progress, but they're like barely treading water. And so where we come into the play in differentiating ourselves by providing them the experiences, the products, and the services to make that extra step, to help them just a little more, both to make more most of their money, but also to help them if something bad was to happen. So these are some of the ways that we try to distinguish ourselves as, again, a bank that's been around for well over 200 years, and we certainly plan to be around for 200 more.
So the 200 years puts your 4 years into perspective. There's a lot of legacy and history. You know, it's really interesting when you say perceived convenience. And, you know, knowing that the majority of what I would call transactions that now as a consumer, I and probably most of us listening are doing are absolutely through a digital platform, whether it's 80%, 90%, 90%+ of the things that we do with our bank. But you say human and digital channel, and that's a really interesting term. I haven't really heard anybody say that explicitly in that same set of words. But as the consumer behavior has shifted to this mostly digital, mostly self-serve primary way of interfacing with their bank, how do you see that evolving then? You know, the big question I have, and you say human and digital, my question is, will I really ever need to step foot in a branch again? And what is that perceived value of what a branch for a bank becomes over the next few years?
Yeah, that is certainly a question that we ponder all the time. And let's talk about the terms that both you and I are using. So I think it's clear what are the digital channels or how we think about digital. It's something that you access on the screen. And often it is very transactional. So majority of our transactions are done over the screen very quickly now, usually one or two clicks and you're done. Your transfer is done. You know, you pay the bill. Very basic things are completed very quickly through digital channels. And then we talk about human and physical channels. And there is a distinction here, and I do think it will evolve over time. Typically, we have thought, well, people have to go to the branch, which means, you know, you got to take your Saturday morning off, you got to get in the car, you got to drive to the local branch, you got to get in, you got to sit across somebody. You're going to take your whole morning to do something with the bank. I think that that need may and will continue to change over time, and fewer people will do that. And I think this is very generational, right? Like some of the very young Gen Zs will probably never step into the branch. However, as people's financial needs evolve as they mature in their financial journeys, they often do want and are asking for human advice. So for that really value-adding conversation, we find that this is something that often is a key why people choose us or stay with us. It's because we're able in those conversations to really help them out, often when they're either not sure what to do or they may be in just a difficult situation. As we know, lots of things happen to all of us in life and we often need help. So I think that kind of a human help will continue to be needed by many consumers, but it may not happen physically in the branch, right? So it may still happen, obviously, and you may still want to talk to somebody on the phone or through the video chat or through text chat. There's lots of this assisted kind of advice that you can still get through the digital channels. But I think the real value-added conversations will continue to be something that plays an important role in our world, and especially with those more complex needs that consumers have. Ideally, we'd love all Canadians to have stronger and better financial services knowledge, but that's not, you know, it's not something that people get regular in school, like they get math, right? Math or English. They don't get as much of a good financial services education. So often by the time people are employed and working, they don't really know how to save or manage their money or really do the right thing. And so this is where they would often come to us for help. And I think that will continue to be the case.
So you referenced the more complex transactions. And I remember standing up at a conference when we were still going to conferences. And I asked the audience with a bit of intent, I said, so how many people in this room have actually gone end to end in applying for and getting a mortgage without actually engaging with anyone physically or through any other means, meaning pure self-service? And there were two people that raised their hand in this room of maybe 200 people. One of them explained that he had been relocating from Australia to Canada and really just didn't know anything. And I guess in Australia, maybe there were some other viable options for digital self-serve mortgage applications. He just did it on his own. The other person was definitely a millennial, first-time homebuyer, kind of felt like they wanted to find a way to do something and just prove that they could. The rest of the room, not so much. There are certain things that I've always said, like getting a mortgage, buying a car, etc., where, you know, the price that you see on the website or on the poster or anywhere is really the entry point of negotiation. And so as you think about this shift, this consumer behavior shift that we've seen over the last few years on what you call the transactional stuff, the easy stuff to do on your own, do you see opportunity to further automate some of these more complex, typically assisted interactions and transactions like getting a mortgage, like getting a loan, buying your house, some of those financial advisor type roles? Is that an opportunity, or is that really where this notion of, to your point earlier, it's a perceived convenience? You just said, maybe I open it up over a video chat or some other sort of digital platform, but there's still another human being at the end. Can any of that be automated, you know, with bots and AI and technology? Or is that really something that until we properly educate the consumer, however we do that, we're always going to have the need for the professional at the other end of the whatever platform I choose?
Well, like many things that have evolved over the past decade and really put on acceleration over the past 18 months of the pandemic, is that so much of those complex transactions in the bank are being automated or made easy to self-serve on. I think over time, we are going to evolve to a hybrid type of a model where consumer gets to choose. So all of the transactional things, sort of to say paperwork, can be done easily online by the consumer, by themselves, without having to come and meet with anybody. But if they want the advice, they can also get the advice. If they don't want the advice, then I think we will get to the point where you don't need to interact with anybody. And in many countries, that's already the case. So I think that's going to be a hybrid, and those banks that are best able to offer to to the consumers whatever preferred method of doing this is for them, those are the banks that will really win in the marketplace.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think that's something that holds true across most industries. And I've seen the experience of, let's say, a Tesla purchase, which is absolutely done end to end. But one of the things that Tesla has going for them that enables this end to end digital self-service transaction is there's very few choices. It's quite simple. The more complexity that you add, the harder it is to do something on your own. And I think that holds true for any industry. When you limit the colors, you limit the features, you limit the options, it's pretty easy to pick A, B, or C. When everything is as complex as the time to pay back, a variable versus fixed, you know, the amount of principal versus the amount of borrowed money, there's a lot of complexity in financial services. So I'm stuck on this thing you talked about, which is this notion of how do we better educate the consumer, which actually makes the ability for a financial institution or a bank to simplify their product offerings and simplify their ability to deliver it. And so that brings me back to the first thing we talked about, which is this notion of differentiation and marketing. And so the marketing tactics that banks are now engaging in to tell their story to the consumer, to try and differentiate, to try and expose this notion of perceived convenience. What are the things that you're now starting to do differently than you did 4 years ago when you entered the role around marketing to the consumer, evolving the BMO brand, and really trying to acquire customers and keep them happy?
Well, you mentioned the complexity of the financial services products. And, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, both you and I have been in different industries. And when I did join financial services industry some years ago now, I was quite amazed with how many ways there are to package a dollar and produce different products and services and how complex the whole field is, and realized how much there was for me to learn about the things that we are offering as a bank. So I would say it was quite a steep learning curve. And what we also see, and Corby, you know this probably really well, when it comes to financial services education, well, not many consumers really want to sit there and read about, you know, financial services in their spare time. They'd much rather watch a Netflix show, right? So there's a lot of talk about financial services education, but consumers do it only when they need to. Most people don't really want to do that in their spare time. So the question is, how do you help them along the way and provide the support the consumers need when they need it? And so in marketing, what we are trying to do is a couple of things. Number one is we split our budget into like 70-20-10 distribution, whereas with 70%, most of our focus is on really doing tried and true tactics to gain the new consumers, to grow the relationships with the ones that we have, and to prevent consumers from trading and choosing somebody else. So those are kind of bread and butter of our work. 20% of what we do, and this is mostly in digital, but not exclusively, are trying new things to achieve those objectives. And so we very specifically put that in our briefs. We ask our agencies for new things that we want to do, etc. And then the last 10% are really kind of wild cards. You know, some net new things, some new employee has an idea, so we want to test it out, see if it works. And if it doesn't work, also, that's fine. We've learned something. So we have really created a culture of learning in our workplace. I'm very proud of it. And it's something that enables the marketers in our teams to have fun and enjoy the work and feel that there is a freedom to learn, to test things and see what works and what doesn't work without feeling that they are doing something wrong if we have a test that, you know, maybe hasn't produced amazing results. So that, I think, is an approach and a culture that allows us to continually learn and evolve as marketers. In the digital space, we, I think, try new stuff every day with every campaign, both with how we target our consumers, how we engage with them in one-on-one conversations. And to your point about the complexity, the one way to remove complexity is to have more targeted personalized interactions with our consumers, with the messages that are solely relevant to them. The more we do that through utilizing the data and AI, the more responsive our consumers are to our messages, because what we're sending to them is very relevant and very helpful. So I think that's one of the key ways that we continue to improve and test new things. The other way is testing new channels, just trying new stuff. You know, everybody talks about influencers now, and we have tried a number of different influencers for a variety of our activities and campaigns. The one we're really proud of is the partnership we have with Priyanka, who was the winner of the Canadian Drag Race. We had launched a very innovative new credit card in the marketplace during the pandemic when nobody else was launching something new, and were really able to break through with some innovative marketing, including Priyanka is our main influencer, and we actually have an ongoing relationship with her and continue to have that partnership where she really promotes our products and services. So influencers are definitely one way that we have innovated as of late and tried to get as close as we can, especially to some of those younger generations.
So let me come back to something you said with regards to the use of data and AI to really drive personalized messages. I think we all have this fantasy that 100% of the messaging, of the emails, of the SMS, the push notifications, the smoke signals that we receive from the organizations that we deal with will be perfect. They will be exactly what we want, when we want it, as you said, because I think the when is just as critical as the what. But maybe, and this is a little, you know, off base, what percentage of the messages, marketing, advertising experience that you through BMO put out to your customer base would you say, or could you guess, is actually personalized? Because I still think we all want this high percentage, but at the end of the day, there's still so much that's batch and mass. How do you think BMO's doing right now?
Like everybody else, we're on a journey. I would say that more and more, very high percentage are personalized. But that doesn't mean that they were created in a one-off way, right? So it's like a hybrid model where we may have a batch campaign of personalized messages, right? So what the consumer gets is a personalized message, but it was still executed in kind of a batch. More and more, we're getting to the life cycle journeys, which are much more trigger-based. So I would say we're at the, I can't tell you a percentage. It's a very good question. I'd have to look at the data, but I would say half and half. You know, we do lots of journeys, trigger-based communication, and we also do some kind of batch, larger campaign messaging. I think both of those, 50-50, I would say.
Okay. Listen, it's not to hold you to it. It's really, I still think when we talk personalized, we often need to remember that it's actually not down to the one. It's still in segments. It's still in some grouping. It's whatever the math works out as a mathematician in your background. But it's always interesting to me to ask that question and really try and understand, is this message I'm getting actually an AI-driven, completely personalized channel selection, timing selection, wording selection? I don't think we're there yet, but you can definitely see what the future holds. And the last thing I want to talk about is very much based on this notion of personalization, because what personalization really requires is a lot of data, right? You need to understand who the customer is. You need to understand their behavior, their channel interactions, their intent, their likes, their dislikes. One of the big topics seems to have come back to this concept of, I think, what we've been talking about for the last decade, open banking. And open banking, as I started, is very much predicated on this notion of data. And the data that is today deep in the bowels of the systems of the banks, but ultimately could be argued is actually owned by the consumer. What's your take on open banking? Is it good? Is it bad? And for whom? For the consumer? For the bank? Love to get your perspective on that.
I think the open banking is something that we are a little bit behind on versus some other countries. So we can kind of see what's happening in other parts of the world to form our point of view on this one. In general, I'm really a believer of a great customer experience. And I think everything that's improving the lives of our customers and their experience is good for them. And then it's good for the business that's helping them have that improved customer experience. So I would say very positive about the opportunities that an open banking system can create better experiences and more value to the consumers in general in the Canadian marketplace. There are some meaty challenges and opportunities that need to be tackled for that to really materialize itself. And I think many banks are learning about those challenges when they start to do one-on-one bilateral agreements with various fintechs. So I think we quickly realized that we need common rules for liability, privacy, and security, and that those would really be critical for the success of open banking. In the words of Darryl White, our CEO, and I found a quote of his that I think is quite relevant. So if we can figure out how to solve for security, transparency, and control, we can have an open banking system in this country that could work very well, in my view. And so I think that is really the key of working together as an industry to create those frameworks that will ensure the privacy, security, and how those will be managed for the consumers. Because I think while there's lots of opportunity for improved customer experience, nobody, including consumers and the banks, wants to introduce higher risks of fraud, protection of privacy, the risk for security, not having enough control in consumers' hands. We need to work together to solve for those things. I do think for the banks, it is an opportunity to accelerate some of these digital and technology transformations that all of the banks are embarking on. And the banks that get ahead of this issue now, they will be in a better position to not just get their early start, but also can further influence how the innovation is taking root in the country. So overall, I think the inspiration and the motivation is very positive, but like everything else in business, the devil is in the details. But I have belief that we work in a great country with very high ethics, with a strong financial services industry that is the backbone of the economy, which I'm very proud of. Years ago, I was watching some analysis of what are the industries to invest in. And basically, if you invested in Canadian banks, this was like the best investment you can make for long term. It's just very stable industry that I think provides lots of goods for this country. I'm proud to be a part of it. And I'm proud to be on this journey of innovation and transformation of this industry and the better things that we can provide for our consumers.
Well, I'm for the most part fully aligned with what you said. And I think the key line that stands out to me is as an industry. I don't think this is anything that one organization or one political entity should actually try and tackle on their own. It's something that for the better of the Canadian consumer and the customer experience that Canadians will get from whatever FI they want to work with, big, small, digital-only, traditional 200-year-old BMO, it's critical that the industry gets together and works together. So I'm fully in support of that. And so with that, Maya Niebel, the CMO for BMO Financial Group, an old colleague, an old friend, someone I hold at very high elevations based on her background, experience, and knowledge, and her math degree. So I know where I'm going for my financial education. Continue to deliver strong perceived value and perceived convenience for your customers. And I think the other takeaway that I really want to capture here is this notion of, you know, the future is human and digital. It's never going to go 100% either way. We're not going back to the full branch experience for our banking. And there are certainly some things that are going to be very difficult to automate. And to be honest, when I'm buying a house, I kind of want to know all the little details and have that conversation to feel trusted. And I know you and your team are doing a great job. So thank you for spending time with me today. And I look forward to seeing you again soon in person. And thank you for being with me again, Maya.
Thank you, Corby. It's been a great pleasure. Have a great day now.
Take care. You've been listening to Fine Tune. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can connect with me on Twitter at CFine, through LinkedIn at CorbyFine, or visit my website, CorbyFine.com. FineTune is produced by me, Corby Fine. Thanks for listening.